This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love, and we're here to help. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate.
Happy Friday, everybody. As you can obviously tell, we are not in the studio. We are in San Diego because we have found how you figure out how to exhaust all the journalists on YouTube at the same time and get a lot of content out at once. And that is, if you're Toyota, you fly every journalist you can find out to San Diego for a couple of days and a minimum of four pieces of content coming out of every journalist that showed up. It's unbelievable the amount of cars, people, logistics, travel that has happened around us in the last few days.
This is nuts. We are here for the Camry Hybrid. The ninth generation Camry is a hybrid only, as you've probably heard. The Crown Signia, the Land Cruiser, which we got to drive off-road, the Tacoma TRD Pro, and the Trail Hunter are here, and the new 4Runner. And people were humming the Baywatch theme.
Yes.
Because, of course, and we were laughing. So Toyota set up the two current Tacoma and 4Runner,
both of which
are part of the lifeguard fleet.
Yeah, they're being used by San Diego lifeguards, and they're all already branded and everything like that.
Yeah, they're red. They've got all the stuff. Yeah, they've got all the gear on them. Yep. So they had them set up, and then they had the lifeguard teams, two teams, do a demo thing. Go into action. Lifeguard, engage. And they flipped on the lights and tore out of here like they were going to save somebody. Behind that came the two new 4Runners roaring in. It was quite dramatic, and you just had to laugh and smile, and
It was so very Baywatch with more clothes. That's the other thing. It was more clothes than you're used to seeing on Baywatch.
Yes.
This was like real lifeguards doing real lifeguard things.
Yeah, actual lifeguards.
It was bizarre to see, but very funny. And also, we have to get there were a couple of waves. There's always lots of waves of journalists. We got there on the evening of that reveal. The folks that had gotten to see the 4Runner before we got there were killing themselves. They were all bleary-eyed, having to have edited something to have launched the minute that the thing got shown on the beach. We aren't those guys, so we didn't worry about it. We were lower stress, laughing at the Baywatch stuff and seeing the new 4Runner. There's so many Toyota vehicles right now, and they're beyond that. I didn't think they could make more SUVs, and yet they are.
They certainly are. There's a lot. So the 4Runner, we'll drive it at some point, but we did get videos of the four main cars that we came to get and saw everybody. I think all the automotive journalists in North America, including a lot of European
journalists. It felt like
journalists,
it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
At least everybody from the U.S. and Canada.
Yep, yep.
And yeah, a lot of European journalists. We met people from Montreal.
There was a German contingent. There was a French contingent. There were a lot of Europeans here as well.
Interesting. This is the big deal. This is the Baywatch
4Runner
reveal. And okay,
come see
Baywatch.
You can
drive some other cars while you're at it.
I don't know. Yeah, so that happened. So we're doing this. There's a lot of Toyota content coming out. There's a lot of other content coming out. There's some surprise content coming out. Other than me telling you it's a surprise, I can't tell you what the surprise is, but it's coming soon.
That's why it's a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. We have some really cool Camaros coming very soon. We're actually getting into our busy season, which I know sounds insane to say because you and I have been plenty busy with Hooked on Driving,
yes.
But we're getting into like the busy shooting season. We're very excited about it. Two cool car debates today and some questions from you guys. Thank you for responding in the questions.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Springtime is here, and good news, everyone. Ceramic liquid wax is now available. It's the most durable liquid wax Griot's has created to date. Satin Finish Ceramic Trim Restorer renews faded trim. It's good for tires, too, and repels water, chemicals, dirt, and UV rays for weeks. Don't forget Foaming Glass Cleaner. That's new, too, which is a professional strength formula for fast, streak-free cleaning. Finally, there's pre-measured car wash pods, so you get the right amount of soap when you use a hose and bucket. It works with foaming cannons and foaming sprayers, too.
Remember, all Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed, and all liquid products are made right here in the USA. When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code DRIVER10 for 10% off everything else on your order. That's GRIOTS. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com.
Brian's writing in, he has owned 36 cars in his 47 years. What's helped that equation is the fact that he's owned multiple cars together. I'm actually not going to go through this list because Brian's list is extensive and varied. There's a little bit of everything on here. Lots of trucks, lots of little front-wheel drive things, lots of full-on V8 sports cars, great range of stuff. But he currently has three vehicles: 2017 Silverado pickup, a 2004 E46 that is the best era of the BMW M3 in most people's opinion, and a 2019 Camaro SS1 LE. He has these three cars, and this is where the questions start.
His headline is, should he feel bad treating a special car like it isn't? That's what he's asking, and he loves the experience of different cars and appreciates many different kinds of experiences, cars, vehicles. He's got that Silverado, the M3, and the SS1 LE, and he's torn on keeping that M3, which is more precious and special to him than the 1 LE, but with 185,000 miles on it, it scares him to track it for the once or twice a year that he wants to do that. So while he thinks it would be more logical to buy an older Accord with a manual or something equivalent to be the cheap mileage eater, like a 50 miles round trip commute three times a week for right now, he's currently just splitting that duty between the three. So he's dividing up the mileage for commute equally between all three of his vehicles, with the M3 being the closest to an all-weather commuter daily, but so much better to drive. Currently, you don't need the net 10 to 12,000 from replacing the M3 with a beater.
So the problem here is the fact that you have what for most people is the definitive era of the M3. It is the one that everybody wants. It's the hydraulic steering, straight six, great looking M3 era, the 2004. But the big issue is they did make a lot of them, and yours has nearly 200,000 miles.
That's a lot. That's
which means it isn't worth much. It's not pristine.
Right.
And you don't feel confident enough in taking it and really driving it as hard as it was meant to be driven and as hard as actually makes that car most enjoyable. So I don't know that that car stays. I have three variants here. I appreciate that the M3 is special, Brian. There's no question that it is. I feel like that car doesn't make sense to keep. I really don't feel like it does.
You think you should sell it?
I do, but the big question I have here, the largest question for Brian is, why do you have the Silverado?
Yeah, that's unclear. We don't know.
Look, maybe you have truck things you do that you haven't described in your email, but what we know is you have it, and you rotate it as one of your commute cars. There's no mention in here of towing or hauling or construction work or big trailer. There's none of that discussed. So I'm curious on the Silverado. I created three completely different scenarios, but in all three of them, I hate to say it, the M3 gets sold.
See, I went a different direction, Brian.
Okay.
You said the M3 is precious and special, more so than that Camaro. So that tells me, why do you have the Camaro? Because you just bought the M3 equivalent from GM. I mean, it's not really.
Yeah, I take your point.
Because it's a different era. It's newer. It's a different engine, you know, but it's still front engine, two-door, coupe, sports car.
Sure, kind of
goes after the same thing. So you kind of already have two of the same thing. The 04 M3 is certainly smaller, lighter, more fun to drive. The 2019 SS1 LE is a beast.
It's a beast. It's an awesome car.
But I don't understand why you still have the Silverado and the Camaro right now. I say keep the M3 and use that as the commuter. Keep piling the mileage on it.
Okay.
And save your money for something else that is a different platform, different, well, not different drive wheels, but certainly maybe mid-engine, maybe rear engine. You get where I'm going.
Sure, yeah.
Because you have the front engine, rear drive, fun sports car, and it seems like you're never going to want to get rid of it. But Todd does make a great point. With almost 200,000 miles on this car, is it going to really start nickel and diming you if it already hasn't?
Yep.
I mean, you can keep them running, really. You could keep a car forever, theoretically.
True.
You're just still dumping money into it. At some point, you're going to need major overhauls. But if you want to keep that car, you could forever and just
keep putting money into it
and keep upgrading, keep it nice. I just don't know that it's the track car unless you get something for commute. Because 185,000 miles on the M3, maybe that's the time to turn it into the track car.
Interesting point. Okay.
Maybe now is the time because it's got 185,000 miles. It's probably not nice, you know, top condition in every area. Maybe, but maybe now's the time to start kind of lightweighting it. And maybe it's time to upgrade the engine, not a full rebuild, but maybe you could start to think about, this is going to be the track car. This is going to be the fun canyon
car. The M3CS, I take your point. He makes his own. Yeah, it's very funny.
I kind of wonder, because you've already got it, you're not going to get a lot of money if you sell it, because it's the holy grail car. You're right, but it's got too many miles on it for somebody to say, oh, this is the pristine version. Like, they're going to see the mileage and just think, oh my gosh, what am I going to have to put sink into this? What am I going to have to put on this car to make it reliable and long-term? And if you sell it, I think somebody will do that and make it a track car and strip it down to nothing. I think they'll look at that and just put a rebuilt engine in it or something, and suddenly, okay, they've got the platform, because 185,000 miles, it either needs to be reconditioned so it's amazing or turned into a track car and you start doing that stuff with it.
Yeah, I feel like that car is at the beginning of its needy years. I just think it's...
We're 20 years in. That's a 20-year-old car.
20-year-old car with a lot of miles. And the big thing that I keep reading here, Brian, is the fact that you don't feel like you can push that car, which that car is at its best when you push it hard. You don't feel like you can because something will probably break.
Too creaky and old. And
so it's a weird combination of precious and old.
Yeah.
Which is like two strikes at once for me. That's the reason, because I want you to have something. Look, our whole point here is enjoy the car you drive every day. So I want you to have something that you enjoy on the commute. What I'm also hearing is the other two cars you don't enjoy on the commute. You don't like taking the truck. You don't like taking the Camaro.
Yeah.
You like taking the M3 on the commute, but the problem is where you like it most is the track, and you don't want to track it anymore. So I'm sitting here going, we don't actually have a car that shines in anything you're doing with it.
That's
so
a good point.
Let me run through my scenarios real quick. The first scenario is, in this one, you're keeping the truck, and I'm not sure why it's there. But okay, sell the M3, keep the Camaro, keep the truck. But what you're buying is either a Fiesta ST used, those are 10 grand-ish, or a Mini Cooper used, those are 10 grand-ish.
Okay.
Both of those are completely different than the Camaro or the truck. And if you commute in those, they'll get good gas mileage. Manual transmission, they'll be zippy fun. You get them in automatic, they'd still be okay. But you can track that Camaro, you can track the Fiesta or the Mini, because who cares? Both of those, any of these cars, you could drive them as fast as you possibly want and not worry about it in a way that you can't with that M3. So now you have the Camaro big boy track car, the Fiesta little boy track car, and the truck for reasons I'm not clear on. But that's scenario one.
Okay, all right.
Scenario two, you sell the Camaro and the M3. Still keeping the truck, I'm unclear, but I'm keeping it for now. Get yourself a low mileage, babied, but ready for track, C7 Corvette.
Whoa.
It does everything your Camaro does.
Whoa.
But it's going to be probably a better commuter than your Camaro. It's almost the middle ground as a commuter between the good of the M3 and the commute and the Camaro. It's like the middle ground. But put all the miles you want on that. Commute like crazy and then take it to the track. You can use it as your daily and your track car, and you have the truck as a backup. That's scenario two. And then scenario three, I lost my mind a little bit. I sold everything.
I was wondering. I was wondering if you got rid of everything.
Brian, as I read this, I was like, you know what? I'm just going to chuck it all out. Because you've had 36 cars in 47 years, and even though you kind of use your current slate on rotation, it tells me that all of it could go. Let's just get three more cars. Let's get all the way to 40 cars. But anyway, for right now, I'm going to get you to 39 cars. You sell all three of the ones you have right now. I'm looking for commute cars that you can also track. I've got two for you. I think if you sell all of the above on your fleet, you could get two cars. Acura Integra Type S and a GR86. Rotate those cars as your commute cars, track cars. Both would be perfectly happy doing either one. The GR86 is going to channel a little bit of the stuff you like about the M3. It's not the M3, but it channels some of that stuff. The Type S can be a grown-up normal person's car or hair on fire. Have those two cars. The Integra can be stealth. It's just, I bought a little Japanese hatchback. No, you didn't. But that's what it looks like. but you could also track it. You can throw anything in the back because it's a hatch. The GR86 is the super fun car that's going to be the best sliding car you've ever experienced. I'm wondering if you've ever drifted that M3 because they're awesome.
Yeah.
The GR86 would do all of that, and they won't be precious at all. Those two cars, commute in them, track them, enjoy them, and I'm done.
That's pretty good. Brian, I've got a scenario where you get rid of the Camaro and the Silverado because I don't see why you need them. You might have legitimate reasons for keeping the truck.
Yeah, we haven't heard. Theoretically.
We don't know.
Yeah, true.
You just have a truck, and I'm not sure that you want it or need it. I don't think you really want it anymore. And the Camaro, you're not getting the enjoyment out of because you've got the M3. And if you can't let it go, keep the M3, sell the truck, sell the Camaro, buy yourself a Honda Civic Si.
I see that, yeah.
That's just fun, but the reason I suggest that is because of gas mileage. You've got a fairly long 3 times a week commute.
Yep.
Let's get you something with fun power and good gas mileage as well.
Like it, yep.
Civic Si, 30 grand tops for one of those. You could throw in a GR86, but I wonder why you need a third car.
Because he's got the disease. That's really the only
Does he need
here.
A third car? Because
not really. I mean, I got him down to 2 in my last scenario. I take your point, yeah.
You spend 60 and you've got a Honda Civic Si for the commuter and a GR86 that is different fun than that M3.
Yep.
Those three would be a sweet, interesting garage. Because the GR86 is not a front-engine, rear-drive car with gobs of power. It's a true driver's car.
Yep.
So what if you
did... It duplicates the M3 a lot. I take your point.
It kind of steps on its toes, but anything that we suggest, like Supra or GR86 or something like that, kind of steps on its toes.
Mm.
I see your need. I see your need for maybe 2 for a commuter. But I kind of want you to sell everything and get one car, a new M2, and be done.
Interesting.
Commute it.
I see it.
Track it. Drive it all the time.
Yeah,
it's superb to drive. You can do everything with that car.
I see it. All right.
What about an M2? Because I sense BMW love. I'm looking back through your list. You had a 2015 435i. You've had a couple of Mustangs. You had an 03 BMW 330i.
Yeah, he's had a lot. You're right.
You've had 3 Mustangs at least. You've had Camrys, Land Cruisers, Tacomas, Accords, Grand Cherokees. Oh my gosh. But I see BMW love in your list, and that's why I'm sticking with that. You could do new M2. Could you do a new M2? Here's an idea. What if you kept the M3 and got a new M2?
That's interesting.
Holy moly. What a garage there.
You would directly know what the M2 has lost from the best of BMW's era. You'd know it every day you got in the back to back. It'd be fascinating, yeah.
There's such a gulf between those two cars is the only reason I can justify having both in your garage.
I see it.
You don't need it.
Yeah, yeah.
But the 04 M3 isn't worth that much.
Mm-hmm.
It's worth more in sentimental value than it is in dollars, and I think as soon as it goes, you'll regret it and still want it around. So I say... Okay, it stays or goes, but otherwise I see the Camaro and the truck going bye-bye immediately. And you've got to investigate something for commute needs that is decent gas mileage, still manual, still fun. I like your Integra. I'm thinking Si. GR86 could be a great replacement for that. But what if you needed to take people? What if you needed a backseat? What if you needed a trunk?
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then investigate a new M2. That, shines at the track.
Yeah.
Lots of power.
Wish it was better looking, but you can't deny how well it drives.
Well, it's sort of like the combination of that old M3 and the Camaro in one new car. It's kind of both of those cars.
I take that. There's a mix. All right, that's an interesting blender moment. I get it. Yeah, for sure.
All right, Brian, you've got some shopping to do. We are very curious to hear what you end up getting. If you've got a debate like Brian's, write to us, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com. Topic Tuesdays, car conclusions, and your car debates.
Spring cleaning is here. That means it's time to take that summer or performance car out of the garage and get it ready for driving season with upgraded brakes. PowerStop's Z26 Street Warrior Brake Upgrade Kit features drilled and slotted rotors that will keep your brake temperatures low while resisting rust. Included in that kit are carbon fiber ceramic pads that will give you durable, reliable stopping power without all that nasty brake dust.
Head to PowerStop.com and fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to find complete kits and components for your car. Join us and thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicles into a stopping powerhouse. PowerStop is brake upgrades made easy.
Adam is writing in. He's playing fast and loose with the family car, which I really like. His wife has a 2019 Subaru Forester, 40,000 miles, and he comes right out of the gate and says, look, there's not a thing wrong with this car. It's done its job perfectly. It's the family kid hauling machine. It's been dealing with the rear-facing car seats, which he's thrilled they're now finally out. But his wife works from home, and the car sits in the garage most days. He said it's safe, practical, but also slow and boring to drive. Nothing wrong with it. But
fast
it's just,
and loose with yeah, the family
but
car.
He's thinking, what is this around for? Because he just bought, I think this is interesting, he just bought a 2023 Toyota Tacoma. By the way, that is the last gasp of the one that's being replaced. He bought it right before they changed the assembly line over. He bought it as his forever truck. I am always a bit concerned when somebody says, I bought my forever whatever.
Yeah, I bought the last car I'm ever going to drive. Really?
Anyway, okay. But you have this 2023, and you've realized it covers weekend adventures, camping, skiing, biking, all the stuff that you want to do for fun. And because the kids are not in rear-facing child seats, the kids are 3 and 6. They fit in the back just fine, so they don't need extra room. You don't actually need a big family car anymore. So the Tacoma does it. So your crazy idea is, honey, let's sell the Subaru Forester. And your wife is like, well, maybe. Maybe that would be cool. Maybe we should have something fun. But if you're going to do something fun for your wife, she wants a convertible. Now we get into problems because now you need a 4-seat convertible, which is not typically how they're made. So that has you looking at the obvious choices for around $25,000. Get rid of the Forester. Hopefully pick up, I don't know, an Audi product, an S5 convertible, an A5. That is your question here because you're going, is this stupid to sell the Forester you know works to buy a used Audi product? And do we have any other suggestions?
Adam has long encouraged his wife to drive something fun. She's always been partial to Audis and convertibles, and based on the current prices, he's thinking they could get about 25 grand for the Forester. And he's thinking, what if we picked up an S5 convertible or an A5 with lower miles? Is he crazy to sell the safe bet and go back into the risky pool of used Audis?
Well put. Very well put.
So, 2 adults, 2 kids for about 25 grand. Adam does his own maintenance on their cars, but would like to avoid something that is in need of a lot of work because he'd rather spend that time taking the Tacoma camping.
Okay. The forever truck. I get it. Excellent.
Here's the cars he's thought about. A3, A5, S5, the Mercedes C-Class, and he jokes about a Bentley Continental. Wouldn't that be a cool crossover replacement? Yes, it would. How about a Toyota Solara? Just kidding.
Very
I saw
funny.
One the other day and went, oh yeah, that was a
they
black
made those,
eye
didn't they?
On
yeah.
the face of Toyota.
Wow.
They're making awesome stuff now, but then there was that Solara thing. If you're joking about Bentley Continentals, Adam, how about the Maserati Gran Turismo convertible? I found you, guess what, a 2010 with 9,121 miles.
That's nothing.
In Scottsdale for $39,899 for 40 grand. Only $15,000 more on top of your price. They actually, a lot of them actually exist at $25,000 and slightly more. You're rocking a low mile Maserati Gran Turismo convertible with that sound.
They are that cheap.
They're that cheap. Scottsdale, not even 10,000 miles on a 2010 Maserati Gran Turismo convertible for just under 40 grand.
That is astounding.
They would love it if you took that off your hands.
Uh-huh.
And it's a 9,000 mile car. It's brand new. It's been puttered around Scottsdale and you know it. It's gone to dinner and
Adam,
home.
This is a fantastically bad idea.
It's got 9,000 miles on it.
I really like this.
You drive this for 30,000, 40,000 miles. It's fine. Just ignore the maintenance and it'll run at least that long. Dump that dirty
this
diaper
is
on somebody else.
To Maserati ownership, you just don't fix. You just drive. That's the key. Paul knows this firsthand.
Yes.
Yeah, I love it. That's great.
Under 10,000 mile Maserati GT convertible for just under 40. What? Okay, just entertain yourself. Entertain me. And just go on autotempest.com/everyday. Search for Maserati Gran Turismo convertibles and horrify yourself and then start to think, well,
Should I? Yeah. Yeah.
Because then you're rocking something at the level of that Bentley Continental. Your neighbors will go like, Adam.
What happened over there?
What the heck?
That is amazing, actually. I'm quite impressed with this idea. It's simultaneously an amazing and terrible idea. I mean, look, Adam, I want to side note this real quick and just say, I love the fact that you're considering this, and I want to encourage you completely to do this. Mm-hmm. Yes. Because yes, the Forester is perfectly good for family duty, but perfectly good and boring is not good enough. You have a window of time. We've talked about this a lot. Life is always changing and you go through seasons, but you realize in this season of your life, you don't have to have a big family vehicle because the kids are still small.
Right.
That window is maybe 5 years, man. Because then the kids will get too big that Tacoma's not big enough.
The Maserati will last at least that window. But tell me I'm wrong.
But, you know, here's the thing. If you have some really fun driving experiences in some that you may look back on ridiculous car, but you still had fun driving experiences in it, I think you have to take the plunge here. I think it's fascinating. I'm completely intrigued by this.
I
cannot
have
believe you found, oh no. Okay.
Many ideas.
Okay, good.
All right, Adam, BMW, I admit, is better at this sort of thing. How about a 323i or 328 convertible? But I did find you a 2011 335i with 61,000 miles for $14,995. For $15,000, 15 grand gets you a black hardtop convertible with the premium package for 61,000 miles.
What year?
2011.
Yeah, that's a great one.
E93, I believe that was the code for the
interesting
hardtop.
Yeah, I believe you're
convertible.
Right. Yeah.
Premium
okay.
package, $15,000. It's a 335. Mm. It's not an M3.
You're right.
But that's
not
what you're looking for.
No, it's not going to matter.
Or, everybody, you saw the Porsche coming. My wild card for you is a 2001 Carrera Cabriolet. It's an automatic, 48,874 miles for 27.9.
Wow.
For just above your $25,000 budget at Plaza Motors, Arizona in Tempe, Arizona, you can rock an under 50,000 mile Carrera Cabriolet in black. It's automatic, mm-hmm. but who cares? You're not out to set lap times. You're there to have a fun, engaging convertible. It's a straight up Carrera.
We had a car like that in our 50 Years of 9/11 film.
It's
and it was
perfect.
A good sports car. Yeah.
50,000 miles for about 28, but that's what they're listening to. I bet you they'd take 27.
That's good. You found some really good stuff. I really do like this because I went a couple other places. My wild card, I'll go there to come back. My wild card was what could you get an early 992 911 for? Because that's the one they made bigger and the back seats got usable. The problem is you're spending 50 grand and up to get those. Now they're not
992 or 996.
Sorry, 991.
Okay,
991.
So prior.
Sorry. The 2012 and up. So not the current model, one just prior to the current model when it got big. The 997 was the right size 911 for me. Right after that, 2012, 2013 is when they went to the 991 chassis. They got big, but the good part of it is it becomes a legitimate four-seat convertible because the bigger car has now usable back seats for you to have a family convertible. But again, it's only twice your budget, so what's the problem? I pulled a Paul there. That worked out well. The two that I had on my list, I like the Audis. They're interesting. The BMWs are going to be better to drive.
I think they are.
So I think that I have two BMWs for you to look at. I like what Paul found, but mine are the 2 Series, prior gen in convertible form.
Yeah.
Surprisingly big back seats for a car that's not very big.
The kids will fit fine.
And yes, exactly. So that's a really good one. And then also, if you can get it, the current 4 Series convertible, you could almost have adult kids in the back of that.
Oh,
every time we drove, and we had one not that long ago, we drove the base engine 4 Series convertible, and there was no complaints about the power, and the back seats were enormous.
Yeah, they're big.
It was one of the bigger, most accommodating 4-seat convertibles I've ever been in. I don't know that you could pull it off with your budget, but they are coming down in price used. So 4 Series convertible there. I think the 2 Series is the right one for you to find a modern convertible BMW, and it's going to be more fun than the Audis. There's nothing wrong with the Audis. I just think that the BMW you would like more. Now, your wife likes the Audis. I think the A3 is not big enough. The A5 is good, but the S5 is better if we're really talking about the Audi products. All of those are not going to have as interesting handling as the BMW products.
Agreed. Adam, I think it's time for you to teach your children about Italian V8s.
I do love what you found. That's amazing.
The music of an Italian VA. Children, come listen.
It's kind of worth the plunge just to see. The fact that the miles are so low is what astonishes me about it more than anything.
It was puttered around, and you know, under 10,000 miles for 40 grand. I admit it's 40 grand. But there are others that might have double the mileage, so you're at 20 or 30,000 miles, which is still practically new.
Yeah.
It's been just lightly driven for much less. I wanted to set the bar at 40, and then you know the mileage can come up.
Totally, yes. The price is going to come way down.
There's many, actually, at the $25,000 price point.
That's astonishing. Well, first photo you need is you need a photo of it running with a picture of the gauges to make sure that it's not a Christmas tree.
That's
if you get past that hurdle, Adam, you really ought to consider that car. I think it's a great find. I cannot believe you found it, but I'm applauding you.
As long as the instrument panel does not say, see your dealer for service, you should be home free, right?
Yeah. In fact, you might want to get the dealer to take a video of the instrument panel.
Ooh, yes.
So they don't just take it when that cycles off.
I cleared the code.
I need a video of the startup gauge cluster and just let it run for 30 seconds. Let me see how the car settles out. And then if it settles out, fine. I like this idea, Paul. That's a fantastically bad idea.
At least hear this car.
It's worth it. Yeah, it's worth it.
You will weep with joy and emotion, and your children will see a side of you that they've probably never seen.
They'll talk about it forever. You know that.
It'll be lore in your family.
I love it. That's very good. Remember the time we owned a Maserati?
That's right.
And that'll either be a bunch of great memories or we'll laugh about how awful it was. We're creating memories either way.
Exactly. You're together. You're with your family. What could possibly go wrong, Adam?
So many great questions. Thank you, guys. You saw all the postings of the 4Runner, etc., and you asked lots of questions. I'm going to jump right to the 4Runner. Zach asked a question on Instagram that many of you have asked about the 4Runner. The question keeps coming up in various different variations, and that isn't this 4Runner stepping on a bunch of other Toyota product? And the answer is yes. The amount of overlap right now with the shared chassis framework and the engine is shocking, because the Tundra overlaps with Tacoma, overlaps with Sequoia, overlaps with Land Cruiser, and overlaps with the 4Runner. Mm-hmm. And they are very much trying two things. They're trying to find a specific niche truck for a specific buyer. They're also trying to keep all of their legendary nameplates alive and refreshed at the same time. And that takes a lot of money, and that is a bit of a gamble. Toyota is up there with total number of SUVs available from a brand. I cannot believe how many they have available. But if you think about what I've just listed off, everything I listed off, Tundra, Tacoma, Sequoia, Land Cruiser, 4Runner, all of those are legendary Toyota truck nameplates. And you will find rabid fans of all of them, and they've all been refreshed. But there is a lot of platform sharing. You and I have raged at Volkswagen before about it. When you get into a lot of these back-to-back, they don't feel that different, which isn't surprising because the framework's the same, the engines are the same, the interiors are the same. So it's kind of like, what is the styling exercise and number of seats for you, sir or ma'am? And you make your decision from that.
I realized I had not answered Clayton Troxell's question from last go-around, and Clayton keeps trying to think of the next generation's version of cars and coffee. He's thinking EVs and energy drinks, which is good. Maybe in the far future is autopilot and intoxicants, I suppose.
Terrifying, but yes.
Dammy jumps in with BEVs and beverages, but I think it's avatars and AI.
Not bad.
We're way down the road of autonomous everything. I like autopilot, but autonomous and avatars
or something.
That's
good.
I don't know what we'd be drinking. Hopefully coffee's going to still be around. Surely.
I realize I got a little bit wrong. The stepping on the market competition was actually Braptor's question. Now I'm moving to Zach, who also has 4Runner questions. And his question, because he's enraptured with the 4Runner, it does look really cool. I admit it looks great. It's got a great presence.
Yeah.
He said, is it worth getting the 4Runner as a new daily when there are so many good used alternatives out there for a fraction of the price? He wants a new 4Runner, but then his priority would have to shift from upgrading his Mustang to a Cayman, where he feels like the price is more worth it. First off, we talked about this a little bit today in some of the drives we did. You don't need a capable off-roader for your daily.
You just don't.
Unless you live down a massive fire road that gets ruddy in the winter. And I have friends in Park City that live like that, okay? But unless that's you, you don't need a big truck for your daily. So in that regard, I agree with you. I think you should just buy a used alternative and save your money for a sports car that feels like a better upgrade. I agree with you there, Zach. But I'm going to give you the flip side. And that is, if you like heavy-duty trucks, if you like stuff that looks like this or works with all of the capability that it does, and you will actually use it, the same thing we say with sports cars, we need to buy the new ones so the manufacturers know we like it and will make us more.
The Real Brochacho on Instagram has a weird soft spot for cheap American economy cars.
Okay.
Which American brand do we think is making the best affordable economy car? Ooh. We realize that Ford has stepped out of that game.
Yes.
GM doesn't really make something in the economy class.
They make a Trax now. And
I guess the Trax is, it's all SUV stuff. And, you know, you're not getting a Hellcat powered anything. Or
Dodge made the updated Dart and then it promptly went away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting because I feel like the cheap economy cars from American manufacturers are far in our past.
I'll give you one that's, depending on how cheap we're going, but look for a used deal on a Bolt, an early Bolt, or a Volt.
A Volt would
Those are a Volt cheap would be good. American yeah. economy cars, certainly in price now, that you will be pleasantly surprised by.
Oh, what about that Cadillac ELR?
Well, yeah. But that wasn't intended to be an economy car. That's obviously a deal. But they're stupid cheap. They're really cheap
now. It's a
Volt. There's a fine there
Cadillac
for sure.
With Cadillac styling and badging, and you can find those cheap.
Mm-hmm.
2014 Cadillac ELR. Yikes.
Auto Tip was to the rescue again. That's great. It's good stuff.
Existed.
Yeah, they're great at their current price. But if he's looking for economy car, I think it's Volt or Bolt.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, fairly new. Yeah, the Trax is the cheap thing on there.
Yeah, that's the one they sell now, but I don't know that I would push you to that. Mr. Singleton says he just saw me and my son out at our local racetrack, UMC, doing a karting day. You should have said something. I mean, I know we were out, you know, we had family time. My wife was with us. We had a really good time. My son did karting, competitive karting for the first time. Hopefully he'll want to do some more. But yeah, if you see us again, please say hello. We were wandering around and he was getting to know everything, and we were learning flags, and we were talking about apexes. We were doing the whole thing. It was very, very fun, and we'd love for you to say hello.
Let's see. Bitter Car Guy owns a fifth-generation 4Runner, and if it were to be sold, a Rivian would be bought instead of that fifth-gen 4Runner. Time to move on and get with the times. Bitter Car Guy, you realize that engine is a hybrid in the new 4Runner. It makes a lot of power, so if you're looking for a full BEV, I suppose Rivian, but are the Rivians going to last? Is the car company going to still be around?
Great
question.
We know
Toyota will,
yeah,
but that 4Runner, we've driven the engines in that 4Runner in the Tacomas.
Mm-hmm.
Those are spectacular, and they're truly hybrid, so you know, you might consider, if you like the 4Runner.
Other Toyota-related things, Mr. Bill is asking me, he said, it's well established, you're right, that I favor cars in Skittles colors. I finally got my Skittle license plate for the Lotus. I'm pretty proud of that. He said, what are our thoughts about Toyota's shade that he calls government issue file cabinet tan? What you're talking about is sand.
Uh-huh.
It's their sand color. And here's the thing. Of their special colors, it is the least interesting to me. But there are off-roaders that love that color.
That's true, yeah.
My wife has a friend who has an FJ Cruiser in that color, and she gets random offers on it. And she had to, like, fight to find one. So the people that like that color love that color. I agree. I don't understand it. I also love the fact that Toyota does special colors on their special cars and trucks. We, this weekend, for the first time in the flesh, saw the GR Corolla in that wonderful bright blue that the Corolla was offered in prior and they didn't offer it on the GR.
Now
it's on the GR Corolla, and it is the right color on that car. So let's go with real colors and not things that could ever be called government issue file cabinet tan.
I like that. Ted Eden on Facebook says in the last 20 years, he's owned all kinds of driving enthusiast cars. GTI, STI, a few M3s, AMG V8s, 12-cylinder Mercs, Model 3 Performance, even talked his elderly mother into a Macan GTS. But his primary driver is now a slightly lifted and modded Yukon 2500. It's like driving an LS-powered tractor, but he loves it. Does he need help? Ted, all of us need help. I like that you've owned all these fun, lightweight sports cars. You're driving a monster truck at this point. But if you love it, we encourage that. And that is the whole point. We all need help. If you find the car after driving many and you've settled on the thing that you really love, brilliant. We love that. We encourage that. I do like that, you know, you've driven the sports cars. If you like the big trucks, great. 8% of me likes that. But I prefer the on-road cars. We like the fun, lightweight sports cars, the great-to-drive kinds of cars. But maybe there will be more. Maybe, you know, just keep things open, you know. If you know that's what you like, and, you know, maybe you'll find another area where you've discovered you might like that too. But thanks for writing. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it.
Chris is writing in on Facebook, and you're tapping into one of our road trips. When we had I had my 300ZX, you had your Porsche 928, we did four different directions of the compass from Park City. And when we went north, we went up to Glacier National Park, and that was a really fun video in spite of some overheating issues. There was great, great video. If you haven't seen it, you really should watch it because it was wonderful. He said he's going to do some of it by driving from Denver to Glacier National Park this July, and he wants to do Going to the Sun Road, which is the primary amazing road that goes through Glacier National Park, and he was surprised to discover you need a reservation to drive the road. Chris, you're right. They enacted this during COVID. It was still enacted when we actually went. It is a traffic culling measure where if you get in there between 6 a.m. and 3 o'clock or 4, it's something like that, you have to have this extra reservation so they can keep traffic down on the road. Now, this is because people drive up in there and want to park and want to go for hikes in the middle of the day, but early in the morning or late in the afternoon, they probably don't want to do that. I'll tell you something, Chris. If you can't get a reservation, we had a reservation. We went through the park twice, once in the middle of the day, which was great, and then once right before sunset. At sunset, you don't need the reservation. And if you're going to drive the road, that's the time to do it. It was spectacular at sunset. So if you don't want to get the reservation, I think you'll be perfectly happy driving in the afternoon. Doesn't mean that getting a reservation isn't worth it. If you want to hike around, there's some awesome hikes up there, and it's worth it if you can.
Tad Adam Green has a hot take about so many performance cars having the usual caveat of plastic parts interiors. Many say that's a negative for the price of the car, but what is the price point where you actually get non-plastic performance interiors in your vehicle? Ted thinks the price of a car is for increased performance, and he doesn't expect a better interiors. He wants his dollars going to the power, the internals, the character of the car, the driving, he says.
Yeah.
We absolutely agree. But when you pay more for a car, everything comes into play. Because when you're buying, let's say, a $50,000 car or an $80,000 car, it can't just be all mechanicals, because at that point you've bought a race car.
That's a good point.
It's just flappy, zip-tied.
Yeah, you don't care if that car looks like that. But
it's
otherwise,
nasty. It's a rattle can.
It
stinks. Man, is this thing fast, and it drives great.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
I think in the $30,000 to $40,000 range nowadays, you can get some nice interiors in that range, but anything below that, you're gonna say, okay, whatever. But right at that early 30, that's like the GR86 Miata kind of price level. Anything beyond that, you're gonna start to think, okay, GR86 and Miata, pretty good interiors, pretty decent. I'll accept that because of the price and because they're so fun to drive. Once we go past that, more amenities, better interior, heavier car, larger wiring harness because more stuff on the car, and you're adding weight of wires. It sounds funny, but the wiring harness does add a significant amount. Seats that do more. The seats are heavy in modern cars, but we like our amenities. We like all that stuff, and then you keep going up. And so for me to justify an $80,000 price point, it's got to have a great interior.
Well, and also the thing that happens here, and Ted, I hear you, because again, I drive an Elise and I love it. You have things like the Evo 10. It was all mechanicals, and it still had the interior of the $20,000 car. I mean, this was the thing that the GR86 gets dinged on constantly. The Miata does a really good job of packing a lot of stuff into a fairly affordable, otherwise, you know, all in the mechanicals car. But the reality is that most people buying a performance car are not buying it as just a plaything. They're buying it to drive it for fun on a fun road, but also through Starbucks and in traffic and down to get the groceries. And wow, it's cold outside today. Where are my heated seats? So you start to think about it because it's going to get usage beyond just fun. I am blessed that I get to drive my Lotus Elise mostly in fun experiences. I mean, I enjoy doing some of the groceries in it because I'm weird, but most of the driving I do is fun in that car. So once you have to have it do a lot of stuff, that $60,000 interior that is actually a $20,000 interior doesn't feel like enough.
Yeah, agreed.
Along those lines, Andrew on Instagram says, what are some of our favorite used large luxury sedans? Have you seen our series on this?
Mm-hmm.
Where I bought the $5,000 Volkswagen Phaeton and you bought the $10,000 Vegas Shady dealership Quattroporte.
Vegas Shady Maserati.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, look, the reality is all of these plummet over time. And so how much money are you spending? Paul's found amazingly cheap Maseratis just in this podcast. You asked us about the G80. I like the G80, but I would never seek out the G80. The Genesis G90, a used one of those, I would buy that. That was impressive. That is the S-Class for less money, and they're probably going to fall off a cliff. The thing about the large luxury sedans is most of them are bought by captains of industry who are writing them off, and there's almost no second buyer for those cars. So all of them, from the super expensive Mercedes...
You and I.
Yes, to whatever. They all fall off a cliff in value. And because they have so much technology on it, that means there's so many things that could, not will, but could go wrong, that you can just... It's amazing the deals you can get. Obviously, if what you're looking for is a luxury vehicle that will just run, you got to go Lexus. But beyond that, how much flash do you want? How far back do you want to go? And how high is your budget? Again, the G80 is not interesting enough to me, but the super high-end stuff, like what is the S-Class and all of those competitors? Now dial them down to your budget, and yeah, that's interesting. One last one for me. Trevor's writing in and saying, any stories about a press car that had mechanical issues? By and large, no. We've had very few that had mechanical issues. I will tell you one that was a real surprise. We had a brand new Honda Pilot, and we drove it. And it was great,
oh,
and we drove
right.
it for a week, and it didn't have a single problem. And we went out and did our interview, and we came back from our interview, and we parked it dead center in front of my two-car garage and turned it off so I could go inside and get the camera so we could shoot car-to-car. And we came out, and it was dead. Not like kind of dead, not like a little bit dead, like dead. Didn't matter how many times you hit the start button, and it's a push-button transmission. And it's parked in the middle of my driveway. It bricked itself. We had no idea why. Luckily, it was parked just far enough away that my wife, who now had to leave, was able to pull out sideways from the garage into the grass and get around it. And then I called the tow truck driver, who arrives. And he arrives with that classic tow truck driver confidence of, I'll figure it out. 30 minutes later, we all concluded what I had concluded before I called the man, and that is, there is no way to take a push-button transmission on this car and hack into it to force it to go into neutral. He had to back his tow truck up. It was like ballet. This was the most impressive thing I've seen any tow truck driver do. He was able to figure out how to get it up onto casters and then slide it up onto his flatbed without scarring my driveway or dragging the truck. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. He tucked the ramp underneath the back wheels and then slid the car up his ramp instead of across my driveway because it was locked.
Crazy.
Took it to Honda. There was a cell on the battery that decided to go bad. Of course, this was a pre-production early car, whatever.
Right, and it's not on Honda.
Yeah,
it's
so
just the battery.
One of the cells of the actual battery for the car had gone bad, and when that went bad, that tripped a warning in the brain and it locked the car down.
Sheesh.
New battery, came back to us, fine.
For the most part, that never happens.
It's nice that it doesn't,
but, yeah. You know, every once in a while. Well, our best of series has now ended. We really enjoyed going through all of that. You heard that on the prior episodes.
Yep.
We went through the best of every manufacturer currently. You know, the manufacturers that we normally drive.
Generally, yes.
You know, McLaren was on there, Maserati was on there, we threw in Koenigsegg and
Ferrari.
We had
a few fun ones, yeah, for sure.
You know, so if you've got a similar series that you would like us to do, ideas for that, we are open to thoughts. We are taking your suggestions on that.
Some of you have written in already. There's some really good
ideas.
Yeah,
there have been submissions already, so thank you for those. And also your Topic Tuesdays, car conclusions, we need to revisit here soon because you guys have been very diligent on that. Thank you so much. And of course, your ongoing car debates, which is great because we have so many people now. They've gone through second, third, fourth cars.
Love it.
You know, they're now so in a good progression, and they're, you know, thinking differently, which is wonderful. We're so glad to hear that. But in the meantime, we really appreciate you guys writing to us. Great to hear from you. We're looking forward to next time. As always, cheers, everyone.